Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win! Yes! Yes! Unbelievable!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot! And the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on Earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my...
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana. What I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
Well, we come to you today with Indiana falling last night against Purdue, 11th loss of the Big Ten season. And I tell you what, last night, just a crazy game from the onset, a low-scoring game, not a lot of points at halftime, really not a lot of points at the end of the game combined for both teams. Indiana's struggles continues. They were competitive last night. I think it's very clear, and Archie Miller said this after the game, they had a better disposition, I think was the word that he used, and I agree completely. They were battling at many points of the game, but boy, there are some things with that IU team that just simply are not clicking now. Seeing them up close and personal, it's the first IU game I had been to in a couple weeks or even longer. You just get even a different feel. You can watch the communication as players come on and off the floor. You can watch the coaches closer, and if you're close enough, you can kind of read some of the lips and see what's going on as far as what they're saying. But this Indiana team just not clicking. I don't know what else to say as far as that goes. They take a loss last night, 48-46, the final score to Purdue. And now for this team, they have to look forward to a game at Iowa on Friday as the woes and the losses continue for IU basketball. Lots of things to talk about. Romeo Langford, a solid performance last night. Boy, he had Nojel Eastern on him, just playing great defense. I mean, he might be one of the better defensive players that I have seen this year in college basketball. Romeo also, not sure if he was sick or a little bit under the weather or just not feeling good for a few moments. I kind of heard varying reports last night, but he was on the court. It looked like he was going to start the second half. And the next thing you know, he's walking off the court with a small garbage can up to him, obviously getting sick. And I heard after the game he had been battling, and much of the team over the last couple weeks, I heard, has been battling some flu virus-like symptoms that have been being passed around. And then Romeo, according to someone, said he just simply had too much Gatorade at halftime, trying to keep himself fluid and energized at halftime. So who knows the exact story, but he was able to come back and didn't get any shots in the second half as well after a pretty decent first half. Did hit some free throws, obviously missed a big free throw at the end of the game or near the end of the game that would have put Indiana up by 1 point. But Indiana falls and the woes continue. Yes, it was closer. Yes, I know some people are somewhat appeased that Indiana was able to compete and show energy and seem like that the season is not a forgotten one. But, of course, when you lose, it, right at this point, somebody wrote this, and I don't remember who to credit them, but at this point, you know, be damned with deposition, you're looking for wins at this point of the season, obviously, with not much longer to go. So Indiana showed some flashes last night of being a team that, you know, can play with Purdue, can beat Purdue, can play with Michigan State, can beat Michigan State, but they showed other flashes last night as well where, you know, it's easy to see why they are in really the bottom of the Big Ten Conference at this point. Let's take a look at the guest lineup. It's a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Joining us today after a couple weeks being away is Jeff Rabjohns of Pigs.com. He will be with us in Segment 2 once we get through our headlines and news of the day in Segment 1 presented by Hoopster Sports Grill. With Jeff, we're just going to break everything down. We're going to start with last night's game. We're going to talk about some of the problems. We're going to talk about some of the off-the-court things that may be going on with this team. We're going to talk about last night's environment at Assembly Hall. We're going to talk about recruiting and Keon Brooks. And if you know Jeff, you know he's on top of all of those topics and more. And he'll be with us here later on in the program to break down those and more. That's the guest lineup. It's a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Mention the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison, and you'll receive $1 off your boxed lunch at Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Let's look at our Hoosier headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news presented by Hoopster Sports Grill in Jeffersonville. And before we get into this, had a text message last night from a friend who also listens to the show. They said, Matt, plans to go to the game, tickets to go to the game fell through last night for the game at Assembly Hall. We went to Hoopsters, as you suggest on your show from time to time. And wow, we were blown away with the atmosphere, the food, the environment. And make sure you check it out, even if it's not for an IU game, even if you just want to go by for a drink or for lunch. But preferably, if you're an IU fan, go by for an IU game. Check it out if you're not in Bloomington. It's a great place to take in an IU contest. A lot of fun. Good environment is the best way I know how to describe it at Hoopster Sports Grill in Jeffersonville. But a couple headlines. Indiana last night led by Romeo Langford. He had a team-high 14 points. But to Langford's credit last night, he had 9 rebounds as well. He also, I thought, played tremendous defense. He maybe a possession or two here or there where he let off a little bit, but generally his defense last night in that game was very, very good. Another thing that stood out to me last night, as great of a season as what Carson Edwards has had for Purdue, it's hard to not respect him with what he's been able to get done on the court, both for himself and for the Boilermakers this year. He was just 4 of 24 from the field shooting. He had 9 points in the contest for Purdue. Other top performers for Indiana after Romeo's 14 points, you drop down to Juwan Morgan. He had 9 points, 3 of 14 shooting last night was Juwan Morgan. Also right behind Morgan was Deron Davis with 8 points. He came in like he's done. He's been a bright spot for this team in some of these big losses, bad losses, I should say. Getting some big buckets. He battled down low with Harms. Fans really loved that. That was kind of a unique story to follow inside of the game last night. Harms getting a technical and a personal foul. Just a lot of battling back and forth. The fans really into that, and I'll talk about that here in a second as well. But overall, an IU team that still lacks some scoring. I mean, and again, it's a game where the final score was 48-46, so it's not like Purdue lit it up either. Both teams didn't shoot very well. What did I see? 32% maybe. I've got that somewhere. I think neither team shot better than 32% from the floor as both teams failed to get to the 50-point mark last night. A couple other notes. One positive and one negative note from being at the game last night. Thomas Bryant, OG Anunoby, Jared Jeffries, they were all courtside for the game last night. Amazed how much they participated in the contest last night. They were out in, and again, I'm sure this has went on over the years from time to time with NBA players and Hoosier greats that come back. But, you know, they participated in some of the timeouts. They threw out T-shirts to fans. But most importantly, and what I want to give a shout-out to those guys for, they stood around after the game. They stayed after the game and signed autographs. They took photos. I saw Thomas Bryant having conversations with an old lady that said she had been an IU season ticket holder for 30 years. They did all the things they didn't have to do. They could have easily got out of there. I'm sure there's plenty of things for them to do while they're in Bloomington, but instead they chose to stay and make the night of a lot of young and old IU fans last night, and I thought that that was really cool. Obviously, they don't have a connection directly to Archie Miller other than he's the current IU coach, but to come back over the NBA All-Star break, get some workouts in at school, that's obviously a benefit for them with the great facilities that Indiana has, but to come to the game and not only come, but to stay and, again, make the night of fans, I thought was a terrific gesture on their part. You could just tell those guys are all very, very classy individuals as well. A negative note last night, I was absolutely, and I'm not at every game. There's no chance of me going to Bloomington for every IU game with everything going on. But one thing that I think IU fans and really anyone that's been around the program kind of holds in high regard is the classiness of the fans and how into it the fans are and what a tough environment that Assembly Call is for other teams to play in. And I thought the crowd generally was pretty good. There were some open seats way up at the top underneath one of the overhangs, the upper level decks, I guess you could say. And then in both of the decks, specifically one, there were a number of seats. And, hey, that's expected. The team's sliding. The seats are way up there. You know, I get it. I really do. That's not, to me, the problem. Generally, I thought the fans last night, from what I could tell, in starting lineups when Archie Miller was introduced, you know, fairly classy. I was, though, appalled, and I don't know that I've seen anything like it at an Indiana game. I've sure seen it at other places, or you hear about it at other places, but I was appalled with the chant that the fans had, not just once for a couple seconds before it could be drowned out, but multiple times in the game toward Harms of Purdue. And I know that he's a guy that can draw a lot of criticism, maybe rightfully so at times, but that sort of cussing, terrible, really, with kids and older fans at the game, that was a big disappointment to me. And maybe for some of you, you thought it was great. Maybe you thought it was funny. But to have that kind of language at a college game at Assembly Hall, to me, is really just a disgrace. I thought the students and fans were great overall, but, boy, that was a bad moment. It's something that stuck out with me. I even saw Alan Henderson tweet about it. He said, quote, "What's going on in Assembly Hall? Win or lose, we should not hear curse chants at opponents and read about it in the Indianapolis Star. That's not what Indiana basketball is about. Someone needs to shut that down. On the PA system, whenever it starts, it's disrespectful to all the players, former and now." That was Alan Henderson with the tweet early this morning about those chants directed at Harms, the big 7'3" post player for Purdue. And it wasn't just a quick little deal that happened once. It was multiple times throughout the game, and the student section was very in unison, we could say, in making that chant very clear toward what they were saying to Matt Harms. And if you want to know more, you can read that story in the Star. It explains it about as clearly as it can. A couple other notes to get to today. I had this Romeo Langford note. He took zero shots in the second half against Purdue. Was sick coming out of the locker room. I kind of went through those already. Still, I thought a very solid performance for Romeo. They doubled him. They had Eastern on him. He was under the weather. He was throwing up coming out of halftime. Didn't get shots in the second half. Still was able to make some big free throws and score some big points for the game just when they needed them to make it competitive down the stretch, and obviously have a chance with him at the line not only to tie the game as he did, but to go ahead by one, and that free throw rimmed out. Also, high school pairings. We've had a lot of discussion about that over the last few days. We had our tournament pairing special on Sunday night. The podcast from that program is available on SoundCloud and Apple Podcast. If you missed it, we had 9 coaches from the area that joined us to break down their teams and their thoughts on the tournament pairings as they were selected on Sunday afternoon in Indianapolis. We also made an announcement on Monday that Kinsey Winstead, a former reporter with the Courier-Journal in Louisville, who took a buyout, an early retirement from them, you could say, he was going to has joined the Hoosier Hills Hoops website to write about Southern Indiana basketball at all levels. And his full coverage of that will begin next week when the sectionals tip off on Tuesday. I know he's got a lot of feature stories, a lot of coverage planned, especially for that opening week of things at HoosierHillsHoops.com. But he is getting started a little early. He's got some sectional previews. Yesterday, the 1A sectional at Borden, a rundown on kind of the overview of that, his picks, his top contenders, and maybe his underdog as well. He also did the 2A sectional at Crawford County, which includes local teams Clarksville and Providence. You can get on HoosierHillsHoops.com and read about those. Coming later today, he'll have a big preview on the 3A sectional at Charlestown. Of course, Silver Creek is the favorite in that sectional, even though they lost to Brownstown, who is also in that sectional, and could potentially be a Friday night semifinal matchup for the Dragons, who got the bye if Brownstown can knock off the host Charlestown. So Kinsey has a nice preview on that coming up later today. And then tomorrow we'll have the 4A sectional preview at Seymour. I'll kind of remind you of some of his work. We'll include it some on the show as well. So you become, maybe that can become a daily reading habit for you to check out Kinsey's coverage of Southern Indiana basketball at HoosierHillsHoops.com. We'll head to a commercial break. We'll come back with Jeff Rabjohns of Pigs.com. We're going to spend a lot of time with Jeff. We're going to break things down last night. We're going to talk about recruiting. We're going to talk about the woes of this team in general. We're going to talk about the direction of the program and a lot more, including the Iowa game on Friday for the Hoosiers as Big Ten play moves right along after the loss, the two-point loss, 48-46 last night to Purdue. Jeff Rabjohns is next. This is a Wednesday edition of the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You f***ed it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a f*** what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And we're back on this Wednesday show. Jeff Rabjohns of Pigs.com is our guest, talking IU, Purdue, and, of course, a 48-46 loss last night for the Hoosiers. Jeff, it's been a couple weeks. So many things to talk about with this IU program, and unfortunately, there's just not a lot of positives right now.
No, there's really not. First of all, I'm going to apologize for my voice. I got an awful cold, but I'm going to try to get through this for you. No, there's not a lot of positives. I think, certainly the effort level has been a big problem. Going back to even the Nebraska game, it's been a big problem. They were able to gear it up against Michigan State, pull off a big upset there. They were able to gear it up last night against their rival. Other than that, I don't know when the effort you would say was really good. it wasn't terrible in the 55-52 loss to Ohio State, but it wasn't really good either. So you really had two games going back to after Maryland, January 11th, when they lost only by three on the road, even though they lost. They played pretty well, 78-75 loss at Maryland. But you had a stretch of about 11 games where only twice effort has been good. Another time, I think, effort was solid at Ohio State, but it's really been a question of effort pretty much since about January 11th. And Archie Miller talked last night openly for the first time about how the team really lost its confidence after the Nebraska game. That was how that loss, in his words, quote, shook us, unquote. And that makes sense because they look like a team that was rattled for a lot of the stretch. So the question is now, sitting there at 13-13 after playing hard last night, is that something that stays with them? Is this something they can maintain, even to salvage a feel of a season? The math says they can get to the NCAA tournament. I get that. I'm not discounting the math, but, they haven't played anywhere near a team that you look at and say, yeah, they could make a run and go to the NCAA tournament. Now, again, I understand the KenPom math. I understand the net rankings, capital NET rankings. I get that. I'm not discounting it, not ignoring it, but I'm just saying realistically, nobody looks at that IU team and says, yep, they're about to make a run and go to the NCAA tournament. So I think effort's been the biggest issue to me. There are other issues. They haven't shot the ball well, and at times they've shot the ball very poorly, 2-for-17 from three. And last night was one of those games, I think in some other games you question scheme, question some other things. Last night they got 26 shots in the paint. They only made seven, Matt. 7-for-26 in the paint. I don't care what level you're at. That's poor.
Absolutely.
And that's just a big struggle. So, but I think overall, the overarching issue from about January 11th on has just been lack of effort, focus, intensity.
Jeff Rabjohns, Pigs.com, our guest. And Jeff, we appreciate you coming on with us. I know last night at the game you told me you were not feeling great, and we appreciate you trying to do the best, and we'll keep it as reasonable as possible. But you do have great stuff,
right,
and look forward to talking with you. Hey, Romeo Langford, last night I know might be a bad example because he himself was either under the weather or something going on coming out of halftime where he had to step off the court and clearly was visibly getting sick as they took him back to the locker room. Then he did make an obvious return and was able to log some decent minutes in the second half after all that happened. But, once again last night, and this is something that really has been going on, maybe even this predates the slide of this team that started in January, but there's a lot of him being over in the corner There's a lot of him not being in a place to get the ball or coming off an action to get the ball or to score a basket. And obviously Romeo knows naturally how to play basketball and what he needs to do to be efficient for this team and be productive for this team. But at some point, you've got to wonder if you've seen Romeo play for years, as many of us have, and then you see him in the second half not get any shots against rival Purdue and still figure out a way to lead the team in scoring with 14 points. Why is he over in that corner so much? It sounds like such a simple thing, but that's over and over again. I hear, why does Romeo always stand in the corner? Is he being told to be there? Is this part of some offensive strategy? What is your take?
Yeah, I don't love the idea. I understand the concept of try to get the defense to switch elsewhere, to focus on action elsewhere, and then be able to have Romeo make cuts to get the ball. I understand the concept. I just don't think it's something that's ideal when you have somebody who has the natural gifts that Romeo has, who has the length that he has, the burst that he has. You know, one of his best skills, as you know well, is with the ball in his hand, being able to get around a defender and make a play. And I understand that teams are keeping a lot of congestion in the paint. So when he gets, even if he gets around his guy on the perimeter, he's running into congestion in the paint. I get all that, but I just think it would be a worthwhile change to just, you know, get him the ball in spots and let him drive. Like, for example, last night, there were three possessions in a row where Ryan Klein is guarding it. Ryan Klein's a wonderful kid. And he's a very, very good offensive player. Ryan Klein can't stay in front of Romeo Langford. Then that's a situation where, you know, you recognize it and you just throw the ball to Romeo and everybody else clear out opposite, because Romeo is best in space. And, you know, some people have said, we'll set a lot of ball screens for him. I'm not too sure I'm in love with ball screens for Romeo, because that brings congestion to him when he has the ball. You would bring another defender and just your own guy, you know, that you got to go around. You know, but in situations where he has an inferior defender on him, and again, I'm not criticizing Ryan Klein. I'm just saying Romeo Langford can get around Ryan Klein. I'm sure Ryan would tell you, yeah, that's true. But those are situations where, you know, I give it to him and everybody else just get the heck out of the way. Clear opposite. I mean, truly clear opposite. Two guys up high to where he's got guys to throw the ball to, other guys opposite the free throw lane. So I think they need to do more to just get him the ball in positions where he can make plays. He did draw fouls last night. He drew 10 fouls, 7 in the second half, and that's well and good. But he's got to get shots. I mean, he's just got to get shots, and you got to find a way to get him shots. And I think you got to have instant recognition when there's a defender on him where he can take that guy. I think you have to have instant recognition. If so-and-so's guarding Rowe, is the automatic call is throw it to Rowe and clear out. Now, that sounds easy as we sit here and talk about it. But I think, you know, one of the other things is the other players have to recognize it. And, you know, some guys who have the ball in their hands, like Devontae Green, don't have high-level recognition. They just don't. And that's a problem. When a guy who has the ball in his hands a lot has low-level recognition, that really hampers what you can do. Because then you almost have to, like, call a timeout to set something up. And that obviously would give the other team, you know, a heads up. Hey, we're about to run something different here. You know, Robert Fennessy has good recognition, you know, but, you know, he's still, you know, working his way back into fully being ready to go extended minutes, you know, after his concussion and hitting his head against Rutgers again. He's back starting, he's playing well, generally speaking, but the lack of recognition by Devontae Green when he's on the floor with Roman Langford, to me, is one of those things you kind of look at and go, that's not ideal. And the other aspect is, I think this is one of IU's worst passing teams ever. There's just not a lot of guys out there who can make passes on time and on target. Even among the forwards, you know, Deron Davis is really good passing out of the post. the shooters. He's good at that. Juwan's not a great passer. He's a warrior, gives you everything he has, but he's not a good passer. Devontae's not a good passer. Al's not a good passer right now. He's only a sophomore. I want to see what he becomes, but not right now. Justin Smith is just a guy, when he catches the ball, I think everybody's just hoping, hey, don't turn it over. I think that's what everybody thinks when he catches it. You know, he's not a passer. So you've got guys out there who just aren't really passers, and that also stymies things. But overall, Romeo Langford can't go an entire half without getting shot. I mean, that's one of those things that just can't happen.
Jeff Rabjohns, Peaks.com, is our guest talking, starting with our conversation about last night's loss to Purdue at Assembly Hall. You wrote some about this after the game. I want to get your thoughts on, we've talked a lot about offense and Romeo in the offense and some of the offensive problems of this team. How do you gauge them defensively, maybe from where they were in some of the successful moments of the non-conference season, some of the big wins in that part of the season until now?
Well, they were really good defensively last night. I mean, Purdue was averaging 77.8 points per game. IU held them 48. That's almost 30 below your average. That is terrific defense. Now, Carson Edwards missed some shots. Yeah, that happened. But he's missed shots in other games, and Purdue has still gotten to 70 points. So it's not like that was just Purdue missing shots. IU was really good defensively. I thought you could make an argument that might have been IU's best defensive game of the year, considering the level of opponent. I'm not talking about some of the early season stuff. You know, holding Chicago State to 55 and that stuff. Whatever on that. But I thought they did a really good job. I thought they were really good at fighting over screens. They did. You know, Purdue runs a lot of action to get defense and try to bait defenders to go under screens so that their guy goes up top and it's Klein catch three. That. They got a lot of action to do that, to get those guys open. And IU did a good job fighting over screens. IU did a really good job of fighting over screens to make things hard with Carson Edwards. Carson took a number of challenge shots last night, really challenge shots. And IU's interior guys also did a good job of taking away some of the angles. And what I mean by that is sometimes what Matt Painter likes to do is move his bigs to a certain spot to where he's moving your big out, and that gives Carson Edwards some space to operate if he gets around his guy. And IU's bigs did a good job of not taking bait on some things. And that's mental discipline, and it's also focus. And that there's no stat for that. It doesn't show up in any box score. There's no analytic for it. He was in the right place that play. You know what I mean? But I think the bigs for IU did a really good job. So I thought it was their best defensive effort. And I thought that was pretty notable, because if you're willing to defend for 40 minutes, it shows, you know, you're still willing to put in effort. It shows you still have some buy-in, at least among, you know, enough guys to put forth that effort. Now, again, it's meaningless if there's no maintaining of it. But after the way IU played so poorly at Minnesota, it was really a big change. I mean, IU gives up 84 points to Minnesota, only gives up 48 to Purdue. That's a pretty big difference in effort and execution on the defensive level. And again, there were some young guys like Tennessee, Durham, those kind of guys who did a really good job defensively out there last night.
Jeff Rabjohns, Peaks.com, talking IU basketball. A bright spot last night, in addition to just the overall maybe hustle and energy. I think those are two words we've used a lot to negatively describe what's lacking from this team. Those were both better last night. But in addition to that, I thought Deron Davis, three or four games now that he's been back healthy after getting just kind of taken out bench to get healthy there for a period of games, he really has done some good things both on both ends of the floor for IU. And last night, he was really good once again for the Hoosiers.
Yeah, he's so good when he has an opportunity to play against another big guy. And I mean big guy, not just tall man. big guy like Travion Williams, who's 6'9", 280 pounds, or Nick Ward, Xavier Tillman of Ohio State, or, you know, Jordan Murphy and those guys of Minnesota. Deron is best when he is engaged, you know, physically engaged. Two guys are, you know, banging against each other, and it's about using strength and weight and leverage to create space offensively or to take away space defensively. When it's a game like that, about strength, about leverage, about being engaged with the other big guy, actually old school post up, then he's really good. And last night was a game where he had a chance to excel what he's best at. Where he has problems is when he has to guard a guy who goes a little bit away from the basket, faces up, and the game becomes about moving laterally and functioning out in space. Deron's not good in space. He's just not quick laterally, doesn't move all that well. But when he has a chance to be on the block and bang against guys like Travion Williams and those guys last night, then he has a chance to be effective. And IU needs him to be effective when he has those opportunities. So that's something that in games where the other team has a guy like that, you know, you kind of look at, okay, Deron's going to have to give IU something point production-wise. I mean, he's going to have to get rebounds and all that kind of stuff, but he's going to have to create points. That can be scoring. It can be assists. You know, he's passed really well out of the post at times. He didn't have any assists last night, but part of that, I think, was I just wasn't throwing the ball in the ocean. But, yeah, Deron definitely, in those kind of games, has a chance to give IU a lift. And I think that's something to, you know, to watch, not only over the course of the rest of this season, but it'll be interesting to see what does he look like going into next year.
Jeff, where does this team go from here? I mean, obviously, it's going to be tough to make the tournament. We've talked about that. They've got a game Friday at Iowa, which is not going to be easy. And then after the Iowa game, what, four more Big Ten games? So five Big Ten games moving forward from this point. What's the goal of this team? What's the realistic expectations of this team? I mean, to win out and maybe win a couple games in the Big Ten tournament, I think you're probably in NCAA tournament discussions once again. But to win out with the team and what we've seen, I think we all – are a little bit too educated now at this point of the later in the season to have that sort of false confidence that maybe this team could do that. I mean, anything's possible, but I'm not betting that or coming close to that at all, given what this team's done over the past month and a half or so. What are some realistic goals and expectations for this team as they finish out the regular season and look toward the Big Ten tournament in Chicago?
Well, I think at minimum, I think they need to try to win their final three home games. Now, I understand it's going to be tough. It's Wisconsin, Michigan State, and Rutgers. Not saying Rutgers is tough, but Wisconsin and Michigan State will be. And I think those are going to be tough games for IU. You know, I think percentage-wise, you know, IU's not even favored percentage-wise to win any of the remaining games other than Rutgers. So, you know, if they can go, I mean, the biggest thing is they got to get a couple more wins. They just have to. You can't finish the season on some sort of like losing 15 of your last 16 or whatever it would be. I mean, you just can't do that. You got to find a way to get something. I think if they could go 3-2 in their final five and win a game in the Big Ten tournament, that's at least some sort of feeling of momentum. Now, I'm not a big believer that momentum actually carries over from one year to the next. I just don't buy that. It's a different team. You get different guys. Guys leave and new guys come in. I'm not a big believer in that. But I think you need to show the fans something. You got to show them some progress. Because even if there's not momentum on an actual team, there is momentum forward or backward in the fan base. And I think IU needs to do something to give the IU fan base some reason to think, okay, well, if they do A, B, and C that we saw at the end of the year, then next year will probably be a little better. And I know that sounds a little cosmetic, but, you know, having your fan base have belief in the offseason helps you. When there's not belief, not that it hurts you, but it's everybody just kind of sitting back, almost unengaged, going, all right, we'll watch you next year, see what you got, but not too sure we have a lot of belief. So I think, you know, if they could win three of their last five regular season games, you know, or at least win two, and then say you lost to Michigan State or something, but it was a really good game where people said, okay, you know, the effort's back. I think that would help. But I really think the effort has to be sustained over the final five home games and however many you play in the Big Ten tournament. People have to believe that the guys who are going to return, whoever it is who's going to return, is going to play the tail off of that Indiana jersey. Because right now, I think some people are looking at some of those players going, do you care that you got Indiana on your chest? And I think, if nothing else, those players need to show people, the players, whoever they are, who is going to return, hey, yeah, it matters to us. So I think that's kind of where I'm at as we sit here with, you know, five regular season games to go plus the Big Ten tournament.
Jeff, let's talk about the fan base, specifically the students last night. Assembly Hall's always been a great place for a game, a tough place for opponents to play. Great fans, educated fans. I mean, we've talked before about Indiana's fan base and really the fan base of a lot of our Big Three schools here going from Indiana down into Kentucky. They follow all aspects of their program, recruiting, off-season. There's never really a downtime for these programs like there are for other really high major programs across the country for fans. But last night, just some crazy chants directed toward Harms. And, you know, you love to see students into it. And people have been critical of that at times at Indiana. So it's great when they're loud and proud and into it and make themselves part of the game. But I was a little caught off guard by some of the chants last night, specifically the ones at Harms. You don't mind when college students get a little goofy because that's going to happen. But when it's blatantly using very foul language at a ball game with kids and others there, it becomes concerning. I'm curious your thoughts on that last night, and have you ever heard or seen that as much as we did and as loud as we did last night in that game? It was a very, very chippy game in general, I thought, between the two rivals. But the fans, specifically the IU students, really took that to another level with that chant.
Yeah, I thought that chant went too far, way too far. Wherever the line is, that was over it. That kind of stuff shouldn't happen. I don't have a problem with students being really engaged to the point of, you know, really pointed cheers or jeers, I guess would be more appropriate. You know, the stuff that Duke student section does, do a little research on the opposing players and know a few things about them and be able to have some really directed and pointed chants. You know, I think is fine. I think it's actually creative. I think it occasionally does mess with the other players. I remember years ago, Hale, who played for North Carolina, one year when the Carolina-Duke game at Duke, Hale had a collapsed lung over the summer, and every time he went to the free throw line, they chanted, inhale, exhale, inhale, exhale. Things like that, it's like, okay, that's kind of funny. It's kind of clever. But the direct vulgarity, I don't think that – I think that's something that needs to be addressed. Now, the people saying, oh, that doesn't happen at other places, that's not true. I've heard worse at Michigan State. I have heard far worse at Ohio State. The Ohio State student section might be the most profane I have ever heard in 28 years of covering college sports. And I'm talking anywhere I've ever been. They are nasty, and nobody at Ohio State seems to care that they're nasty. However, just because somebody else is being very vulgar doesn't mean you do it. If you're sitting in a restaurant at a table, and three tables down, people being vulgar, you're not going to sit there at St. Elmo's and go, well, they're being vulgar, so let's just sit here and let's all be vulgar. No, that's not how it works. You have standards or you don't have standards. In Indiana University, students should be better than what they were last night. Now, they were great. I'll also say this. I thought they were great 99% of the time. We're pointing out, you know, one or two things they did that were over the line. So I think this perspective needs to exist as well. But, yeah, those chants and Harms, I thought that was wrong. I don't think that should happen. I don't think that should happen in Indiana. Personally, I don't think that should happen anywhere. I mean, even at Pacer games, they don't chant stuff like that. You know, they come up with stuff. You know, like when they were playing against the Lakers, they came up with, you know, several guys when they went to the free throw line, they came up with, LeBron's going to trade you. LeBron's going to trade you. You know, I mean, there was some thought behind it. But, yeah, that kind of stuff, the chanted harms, I think it's wrong. I don't think it should happen. I think Indiana needs to address it with the students.
Talking with Jeff Rapp, JohnsPeaks.com here on a Wednesday edition. I've asked Mike Pegram this. I've asked others that come on this show about how this negative couple months, this big slide at whatever you want to call it for IU basketball, how it could affect recruiting. And again, recruiting has been so far just an ace job. There's no arguments in that by Archie Miller, given what he was able to do in 2018 with that class, with Romeo Langford. Even going back to his first year here, he was able to keep the existing class intact and make it smooth and a transition that was very respectable and smooth as well. And then, of course, in 19, jumping ahead to guys coming in for next year, Trace Jackson Davis, a huge target in the state of Indiana. Armand Franklin is in the fold. Indiana has been very, very close and in with Keon Brooks, although potentially there could be some slippage or has been some slippage in that recruitment, it sounds like, of recent. But, you know, let's call a spade a spade. When you lose as many as what IU has, it becomes harder for coaches to sell the program and to sell what they're trying to do and to sell how they would use you next year. There has to be some concern when a family like Keon Brooks and his dad and others sit down and evaluate the schools. I know that one season or a bad couple months or whatever the case is doesn't necessarily define a program or a coach or a coaching staff by any means. But do you think we're getting to the point here with all the losses and the negativity that this could impact the recruitment of Keon Brooks or maybe others as well?
Well, there are definitely layers to all this. And let's kind of start at the like fundamental layer, and let's work upward toward nuance. At the fundamental layer, most high school players don't watch a ton of college basketball. They just don't. I mean, Lalamere is the best program in the state right now as far as, number of Division I players on their team. You know, they're up there in La Porte. They're a prep school. They're ranked number one in the nation. They've got at least nine guys who are going D1, and it could be 11 if a couple of the younger players progress. They had a kind of like a pizza party thing recently, and they had multiple TV screens going. They had games going of various teams that were recruiting a number of the players that are standing there in that room at that moment. Those players sat there and ate pizza, jacked around on social media, messed with each other on Facebook, talked about, you know, what they're going to be doing later, joking around. They paid zero attention, absolutely zero attention. And teams that aren't recruiting them are playing on the TV screen in that room, paying no attention whatsoever. And that's just one anecdotal piece of evidence. But overall, high school players, they play video games, they watch the NBA, they practice, they train, they eat like the world's going to stop producing food tomorrow, they hang out with the girl, they hang out with the boys, they jack around like normal teenagers. That's most of their life. Most of what high school players know about the colleges recruiting them comes from what the colleges recruiting them say. And that's been true for years and years and years. So that's the fundamental layer. Now, the next layer, high school students overall, not just high school players, high school students overall are very, very active on social media. It's almost like their sandbox. And the Brooks family has noticed some of the really nasty stuff that IU fans are saying about IU on social media. And for some reason, some IU, quote, fans, unquote, have decided to tag Keon Brooks in their rants about IU and expressing their displeasure. Now, why in the world anyone would do that, I don't know. Alcohol-fueled stupidity, I don't know. Because some of these people are so, over the line, they don't even realize when they're tagging Keon Brooks' dad and not tagging Keon Brooks, the player. So not only has Keon seen it, so have his parents. So when you ask about negativity, Yeah, some of that's been seen because some IU fans have directly tagged Keon and his father in their social media rant. That's obviously, wherever the line is, that's way over it. As far as wins and losses total, win-loss totals don't often have direct impact on whether a player is going to this place or not. The local example, we could pick many examples. Let's stay local. Cody Zeller watched IU donk off a couple, two terrible, you know, losing seasons, not just a couple games under 500, losing seasons. And at the same time, he was deciding between Indiana, losing seasons, North Carolina, national success, Butler, national success. Those were his final three. He ended up picking Indiana. All kinds of playing time, felt the program would be great again. He wanted to be a part of making IU great again. So there are times when wins and losses specifically don't matter. Now, the more nuanced thing is, if you're not playing well, people, meaning recruits, the families, the coaches around them, whatever, they start looking at, okay, what's going on there? Are there issues, or is it just bad personnel? That's kind of the questions that they look at. Are there actual issues, or is it just bad personnel? You know, like the Zellers, you know, when they looked at IU's losses, they didn't think it was a problem. They didn't think it was about Tom Crean or IU or anything like that. They thought, well, you know, hey, they're having to play walk-ons. They've got some other problems. They've got some pieces that just don't fit. When the pieces do fit, IU will win again. That was their view. Now, each family, each player is going to make his own view. What does he think? Does he think there are actual issues within the program? Or does he think it's just, hey, they've got some players who just don't fit. When those guys leave, it's going to get rolling again. So that's going to be one of the things that Keon and his family are going to have to decide for themselves. Now, people's probably next question is, okay, well, what do they think? Well, Keon gets out of school on Friday afternoon for Lalamere spring break. He's going to go home for a little bit. This weekend, he and his family are going to sit down and start talking over some things. So when they start talking, that's one of the things they'll talk through, and they'll decide at that point what matters. It's worth keeping in mind as far as timing of all this. If you're talking Keon Brooks specifically, you know, he went down to the Kentucky-Tennessee game, but his parents didn't even go with it. He just went down with a family friend. So that visit matters. Kentucky is definitely a legitimate contender, but I've been writing for, 4 months now that Kentucky's a legitimate contender. Nobody wanted to listen to me a couple months ago, but I was writing it. Kentucky has been and is a legitimate contender, so that matters. But just because there was one visit late, you know, doesn't mean it's automatically going a certain direction. You can look at a lot of different examples. You can look at Romeo, you know, going to Vanderbilt, those kind of things, Vanderbilt late. You can look at Robert Johnson, visited IU, went home, talked to his mom and dad, went, you know what, I want to see Carolina and Virginia too. Took those visits, picked Indiana. So it's the point there is that one specific late visit is not automatically a harbinger of where somebody's going to go. But again, Kentucky, Michigan State, Indiana, all serious contenders for Keon Brooks right now. Don't scratch out anybody, even in pencil, just yet, because the family hasn't had a chance to sit down and start going through some things. So that's where I would put the layers of how do recruits often look at things when a team starts losing or has a losing streak.
Jeff Rabjohns, Pigs.com, all kinds of good stuff today. One final thing, and we've got a lot left of the season, the regular season, the conference tournament, and who knows what could or could not happen with the postseason. But this came up earlier this week, and I do want to mention this with you. You don't have to talk specifics or rumors or anything like that, but what are your thoughts on the roster for next season? Is there a chance you think there are some departures at the conclusion of this season based on how things have went, or is it just too early to even think or even discuss that sort of stuff?
Well, I think the math says there's going to be a departure or two, just because you look at, I think, programs average 1.2 transfers per year. IU didn't have any transfers last year. So I think when you have a coaching change, I think it's tough to envision no transfers at all. Now, the problem is I don't think there's going to be a ton because of where Indiana's academic progress rate was after Tom Crean left. The academic progress rate, this is going to get kind of boring for a minute, but it matters. The academic progress rate is a four-year rolling average with a one-year lag. So like in 2018, IU's APR was calculated from what happened through 2017. There's a one-year lag, four-year rolling average. The APR, academic progress rate, if it goes below 930, you get a postseason ban, total straight-up postseason ban. Indiana was, I think it was a 938 after Tom Crean left. And that included Crean's last year. His single year was below 930. The four-year rolling average was a little over, but Tom Crean's last year was below 930. That meant if one guy last year left IU, either not in good academic standing or not with a certain grade point average, IU would have been docked a certain amount of points and would have had a postseason ban. In Indiana, as a university, has made the decision, an institutional decision, they do not want to go below 930. They do not want to have a postseason ban. Whether it's a year you think you're going to make the tournament or not, that's irrelevant. They don't want that stigma of they got a postseason ban for academic issues. So you can only have a certain number of guys transfer. Now, can that be more than one guy? It depends upon where the people are academically in a grade point average who would transfer. If they're at a certain grade point average and they transferred, that would not hurt IU. If they're below a certain grade point average and they transfer, they would hurt IU. So that's part of, and again, I know that kind of stuff is boring. I know fans really don't care about it. I understand that. But that is kind of a factor that will come into play as far as, is IU going to have transfers? If so, how many? But I certainly think it's reasonable to expect, just based upon the math, as some kind of departure potentially at the end of the year. Not guaranteed, not saying it's definite, but the math certainly says it's likely. So I think I would certainly expect at least one or two departures or something of that nature.
Jeff Rabjohns, Pigs.com. Under the weather, but still with us on this Wednesday. Great information. Thanks for the extended chat, Jeff, as always. Great to see you last night as well, and hope you get feeling better soon.
Always great seeing you, man. Always great hanging out with you. Sorry for my voice, man. Have a great week. We'll see you soon.
Absolutely. Jeff Rabjohns, Pigs.com, with a little extra effort to share some good information today on this Wednesday edition of the program. Lots of things covered there with Jeff, from last night's game to recruiting to the fan base to what maybe even the future of the roster could look like next year for the Indiana team. And of course, when the season ends, that's when the recruiting stuff heats up, potential transfers, and those discussions heat up this summer, this offseason, I should say. I fully expect we'll have an opportunity to follow and cover Romeo Langford as he makes his way through the NBA draft workout process with many different teams and franchises, and the opportunity to work out at the big event in Chicago. So going to be plenty of stuff. We've still got great level of basketball, great number of weeks of basketball left, I should say. But when you think ahead to what we could be talking about in the offseason, it definitely could be an interesting offseason for this IU program. That's going to wrap things up for this Wednesday program. On Thursday, Lee Kelly is in studio with me, and Alex Bozich will join us to talk IU basketball. We'll also have our Southern Indiana basketball update, which will be big with the state tournament and sectionals just around the corner. So make sure you join us tomorrow at 11 o'clock for that. Don't forget a podcast of today's show available at SoundCloud and Apple Podcast. Until tomorrow at 11 o'clock, Matt Dennison saying good day, everybody.